Blog Talk Radio.
Stories don't have to be true. By including elements of the fantastic, elements of fable, or mythological elements, or fairy tale, just pure make-believe, you can actually start getting at the truth in a different way. It's another door into the truth. And that's why I think the thing that is interesting about the phrase magic realism is that when it's used, people tend only to hear the word magic. So they think it's just about fantasy. But the word realism is as important. What this kind of writing tries to do is to be grounded in the real, to be grounded in an actual, quite strong vision of the real, and then use techniques to express that vision, which don't necessarily have to be realistic. The thing about magic realism, so-called, is that it's a new-ish name for a very old thing. And this particular name came into being in Latin America in the late 1950s, and was used to describe a group of writers, Borges, Garcia Marquez, Vargas Llosa, Julio Cortázar, Alejo Carpentier, and several others, who used techniques which diverged from straightforward naturalistic writing. They used elements of fantasy and dream, and included those in the text of the story, as if they had the same status as observable facts. No, I mean, I've always been, as a writer, from the very beginning, I was interested in this general area of fiction. I mean, I started out, as a young person, long before I wrote anything, I was very, very interested in science fiction, and I read an enormous amount of science fiction in my teens and early 20s. And actually, my first novel, Grimus, which was published more or less just over 40 years ago, was really in that area. It wasn't science fiction, but it was certainly fantasy fiction. Because I think that form of what might be better called speculative fiction has always been a very good vehicle for the novel of ideas. If you have ideas that you want to set in motion and interrogate and argue about, science fiction, fantasy fiction has always done that. It's always done it very well. So I always had that interest. And I mean, that interest in that kind of genre fiction, combined with my knowledge of Eastern fable and folktale and fairy tale, and all of that went towards turning me into the writer that I became.
That was Salman Rushdie talking about magical realism, the type of writing that he does. And welcome to Our Craft or So in Art. I'm your host, Richard Weissmith, and I am going to bring on our first guest. Uh, 585, you're on the air.
Good evening, Richard. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you doing, Laurent?
Cold. It's about -1 here.
Ooh, that's cold.
It's cold.
Yeah,
it's nippling.
So it's not that. Yeah, it's not that cold in Florida. We are, I don't know, we're probably maybe in the 50s right now, which is kind of cold for us, but it's pretty comfortable.
Well, I'll tell you what, you wait a couple of days, it's supposed to be in the 30s in Florida.
That's right. Yeah, no, we've been in the 30s, like just a couple of nights ago, so it's getting down there, but it is winter, and just part of the four seasons. So, thanks. Go ahead.
I was going to say my granddaughter down at Disney World right now. I've been getting pictures sent all day. She's having the time of her life.
Yeah, it's really, today was a nice day. I actually was outside and got a little too much sun, so I got to be careful. Got a little lightheaded from it, but I'm okay. And thanks so much for being my co-host tonight. Neutron is under the weather, but she is recovering, and we'll see her in a couple of weeks when I do the next show. But tonight we've got an evening of Rushdie. So I don't know if you heard that intro that he did.
I did. I'm not that conversant with magical realism, so I was very pleased to listen to what Salman had to say. Although, having read science fiction primarily for the first 45 years of my reading life, I've become aware that people are always trying to rename science fiction. Some about it they find constraining. You know, he said speculative fiction. Well, you know, if you speculate, it could be either science or fantasy. Now, if you're looking at science fiction, it's called that because it's based around scientific principles. As a scientific conclusion, there's a lot of actual dry science. Now, the best people, like Asimov and Bradbury, et cetera, did it very poetically, if you will. They wrote beautifully. But it's not speculative fiction. It's science fiction. Speculative fiction, to me, is everything else, including fantasy.
Right. Right, yeah. I really just love all writing. It's pretty hard to find the type of writing that I don't like. It's all about quality of the individual piece. And some of my favorite writing is in science fiction. But magical realism has always held a special place in my heart. It's as old as the hill. If you think about what it is that's being done, I mean, you know, Gulliver's Travel is magical realism, as far as I can tell.
Okay,
right?
I get you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it had, you know, just this big kind of movement in the 1950s in Latin America, where you had a bunch of writers all doing the same type of art form as a movement. So I think that's
right.
Where they came up with the term. But it's
now, let me ask you
forever.
A question. Let me ask you a question. What science fiction book would you say was the most impactful? Not the best, but most impactful.
Wow. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably say, and this could just be me being in love with writing, but I think Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah, Bradbury wrote beautifully, but he's right on my list. My top 10, especially his stories about Mars.
Yep.
Fantastic little stories. For me, it was Foundation Trilogy. I found that hugely impactful.
Mm. Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is a genre that I don't know as well as many others. So, I really like Asimov and Frank Herbert. There's some really talented writers.
Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Heinlein would be another one, yeah.
Yeah, there's some great writers in that genre. All right, so there's just the two of us on right now. I know Naomi was saying that she was going to try and call in, so hopefully she'll join us. Pam is saving her throat, is my understanding.
Right.
I do have another call on hold, so let's pick them up.
Hello?
Hi. All ones, you're on the air.
Yeah, it's Naomi.
Hi, Naomi. Glad you could join us.
Yeah, my throat too. But, you know, I can... Yeah, I know. We're all in the same boat. Started yesterday. Yesterday morning, like real sore throat, like my throat was on fire. But today it's a little bit better. It's still a little bit foggy there, but you know, it's okay. It doesn't hurt anymore.
Well, that's good. Yeah, you sound good. Your voice sounds good. And the nice thing is, the poem that you shared with us has a SoundCloud, so we could always talk to that if your voice starts getting tired.
Yeah, but so, I can read for you too and help out there a bit.
Great. Well, we certainly appreciate that. And did you hear the intro?
No.
Sorry. Oh, that's okay. All right, so, well, it's great to have you on board. And with that, I think we'll get this party started whenever you're ready. Laurent, it's the first piece.
All right, you're the first reader. The first poem is up.
Okay, all right. So this is Be Not Afraid by Becky Upchurch. And it goes like this. Does land love the ocean more? Or does tide push back the non-committal force, leaving bits and pieces of itself in love's overwhelming embrace? Can there be joy in giving oneself without first this fear of being rejected? And what of shallowness, of neat nonchalance, a reprieve from passion's full plate, fear of disappearing. Be not afraid to burn in love, nor fear its dying embers, for there is no end to love, as in living without it. Ask for more of its bits and pieces. They fill in all the hidden coves of your shyness, fear, as you'll see the storms pass away and did not swallow you whole, only the fear. End of poem.
Well read.
Thanks so much. Yeah, it was a nice poem to start with. And to get us started out, Naomi, I'll give you first word. What do you think?
Yeah, I just read the prompt there to situate myself more. It's the one about about swallowing the world. Yeah, she has interesting lines in here. Be not afraid to burn in love, and can there be joy in giving oneself without first this fear of being rejected? You know, that is so deep, you know, that made me think, because it's so hard, you know, to give oneself without that fear of being rejected. You know, I always shelter myself from that fear, you know, and like not letting myself go completely being in love, because always that fear is there of being rejected. So she brings up some amazing thought-provoking, reflections throughout this poem. And, you know, it's very, anyway, for me, it touched me personally. And yeah, bravo, Becky, for this poem. It's just amazing right here.
Absolutely. Great comment. Very insightful. I, too, really identified with it. And the prompt that we're talking about, a lot of people chose this one, prompt one, to understand just one life, you have to swallow the world. and that's from Midnight Children, which is actually my favorite novel of Rushdie. Some writers, their first novel that makes it big really is their kind of stamp, and that's how I've always felt about Midnight Children. Just such a brilliant novel. And Laurent, your thoughts on it?
Yeah, the poem stresses two subjects: fear, among them fear of rejection, and you know, how do we avoid rejection by never venturing into the world, and love. Now, fear in general, but especially fear of rejection, is a great demotivator, I think. It's a snake bite. It poisons us. It paralyzes us into indecision, bringing on the very neat nonchalance that she cautions about. Be not afraid to burn in love, nor fear its dying embers, for there is no end to love as in living without it. Fear is the whale that would swallow us, but even Jonah survived, rescued through love and grace. As much of that as we can assemble or hold will see us through, not necessarily in the theological sense, but in the secular faith we place in ourselves that the storms will pass away. I think this is a deep work, very well positioned to show love with all its bits and pieces at the core. Excellent piece.
Another tremendously insightful comment. Yeah, it's fear is the mind killer, right? Frank Herbert. I love this. Yeah, and I love this piece. To me, it had a Proverbs, Ecclesiastes vibe, and just very compelling, full of reverence for life in all its varied hues, it had that kind of carpe diem feel, despite fear, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. And I thought it was a wonderful ad for our evening of Rushdie and a wonderful way to start out the evening. So with that, I am going to bring it back to you, Laurent, for our next piece.
Okay, I'm going to be the next reader. I'm going to put up the next poem by Stephen New York. And it's called Rabbit's Foot. He trapped rabbits close to the airport's operatic, and the cars smell like cigarettes, hardback, Kents, well before everything went woke, something he would never understand. A 79 Nova, red, the fresh residue of yesterday's bag French bread, a tan interior that escorted me through parts of Queens I had never seen, to the eventual side view of the tall common cocktail grass, with the underbellies, roars, and hydraulics of planes above. Him in his flannel shirt, me in my 10-year-old sheen, and what I didn't know yet in my innocence, in a childish vague abstract that I couldn't yet touch, was the sense of the peeled or the unmasked, or what, as an adult, I would call a naked, spirited, virile, masculine approach to life, that in today's world should never be afraid to be revealed. That came from those trips for Wild City Cottontail, and that those browns were the fonding of white, precious little things caught in wooden Frankenstein metal traps, built by hand, could be butchered, seasoned and stewed, or braised, poured nude over polenta. And that a lucky rabbit's foot given to me by my father was jagged, rough cut, chopped off, bone exposed, blood tinged, dirty, and looked like nothing that of those that schoolmates showed off and had twinkled on their keychains that were mass-produced, dyed, polished, fake-furred, impostors, and bought on the avenue. End poem.
Wow, what a powerful read. You really did it justice. Gosh, Stephen, I tell you, you know, he brings it every week after week when we do these shows. And what he did was he chose a different Rushdie prompt, which we always encourage people to do. And the prompt was, the quote was, "My father said that the natural world gave us explanations to compensate for the meanings we could not grasp. And then also the first storyteller in my life was my father." And it's an interesting set of prompts that he chose because it is one of the themes that you see in Rushdie's novels, especially the later novels, is the whole father-son thing. Gosh, which one was it? It's something with, forget the title of it. It's been so many years since I read it, but it's the Djinn. Where it's, I'm not going to remember. But anyway, it's all about the son and the father, and it's actually the character, the main character, the protagonist of the novel is Rushdie's own son. So it's almost like he wrote this bedtime story for his son at a certain age. So it was quite, you know, quite apropos that Stephen picked the prompt and the theme of fathers and sons, since it factors so heavily into Rushdie's later work, and just does a masterful job with it. A tan interior that escorted me through parts of Queens I had never seen, to the eventual side view of the tall, common cattail grass with the underbellies, roars, and hydraulics of plains above. And his storytelling poem brings Queens and the rabbit to vivid 1970s life in a personal and intimate fashion for me. Because I grew up, I know that part of Queens, near the airport, near LaGuardia. There's this kind of like wetlands in Douglaston, Queens. And the rabbit figures big in New York City history. So everyone knows Coney Island, and that Coney comes from Coney, which is rabbit. So the island of the rabbit. And it relates to the fur trade and has a big piece of greater New York City's long history of fur trade. And I love how he contrasts the real rabbit's foot with the fake feet sold on the avenue. It's just a great metaphor for materialism and conformity being contrasted against spirituality and authenticity and ethnicity. It's a very, very strong poem, very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts, what do you think?
Sorry, I had a coughing jag. I agree with you completely. The whole thing as a whole was particularly poignant, the way he used a 10-year-old and what he says about that 10-year-old when he writes, what I don't know yet in my innocence and a childish vague abstract that I couldn't yet touch was the sense of the peeled or the unmasked or what as an adult I would call a naked, spirited, virile, masculine approach to life. But of course, when his father shows him a real rabbit's foot, as opposed to the fake rabbit foot. Well, that is that, you know, the explanations for the things that we can't grasp. And, you know, regardless of where that approach was born, I don't think it should be hidden, but prized. You got to revel in the bone and blood of the real thing. Recognize the fake for what it is. And he stays with the real, but with the most eclectic and powerful simplicity. Nicely done.
Great comment. And I actually cheated a little bit and looked, and the novel that I was thinking of was Luca and the Fire of Life, where it's basically the story of his son is the main character, Luca, and he's he searches for the fire of life, and that's the journey that he goes on, the hero's journey. And Naomi, I'm going to give you last word on this piece. What do you think?
Oh, I think this is amazing. The imagery throughout this is just like, you know, just so raw there, and it's just so beautifully done. Just so amazing. And I think, you know, that the real rabbit foot that his father gave him could be the like it is a metaphor for everything that is, you know, true, real in life. Like, life is not polished. It's not like fake fur. It's not dyed. It's not, you know, it's not pretty. Life can be hard. It can be rough cut. It can be jagged. It can be bloody. It can be dirty. You know, life is not, you know, polished and beautiful. You know, it is hard. So, yeah, this is a very, very powerful poem. Bravo, Stephen N.Y.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, and with that, I'm turning it back to you for our next one, Laurent, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Now, Naomi, are you up to reading a poem? Okay.
Good. Yeah, okay.
I'm putting one up by a neutron bomb for you to read.
Okay. I'm getting to the page there. Okay. Yellow belly. Okay. Lanvin sunglasses shading astute eyeballs. Lips plumped like Play-Doh. Breasts fashioned like snooker balls. Legs splayed. Lock him in with progeny before he knows the you within. The exterior, an artwork like Picasso, whilst the interior reflects Dorian Gray's concealed artwork with fetid tissue oozing from the stretched canvas. No need for a chastity belt. Rather a feather duster for the cobwebs, an expectant husband throttled by greed in a faux nautical theme. Soon there will be dotting children absorbing kerosene like cloth. The oil paint separates and drops in solution. Much like your parenting skills, you should have flicked paint, procured better contraceptives rather than inflicting your chrome yellow belly on the globe. End poem.
Nicely read, Naomi. Thank you so much. And this was the prompt, children are the vessels into which adults pour their poison. And not a surprise that Neutron chose this one. She's just such a great confessional poet, and just a natural choice for her. And if we can start with you, Laurent, what were your thoughts?
Well, a very hard-hitting poem. Excuse me. It really hits. At least it hit me. With the energy of a runaway freight, is dripping large portions of irony and condemnation. I love the word usage and the phrasing. And this stanza, you should afflict paint, procured better contraceptives, rather than inflicting your chrome yellow belly on the globe. We've all been children at some point, and yet we do not seem to recognize our former selves when we see them. And so the pour, the poison, in anticipation of the now and the when, they are born. I thought it was very powerful.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I too love this piece. Soon there will be doting children absorbing kerosene like cloth. The oil paint separates and drops in solution, much like your parenting skills. I thought it was a great take on the Rushdie prompt, pouring of poison indeed. The transference of toxic traits of the parents is a painful truth. Children are sponges, and unless or until parents heal, then the sins of the fathers will ultimately be visited upon the sons, as it says in the book. So I thought you really did a great job with that prompt. And Naomi, as reader, I'll give you final word on this piece.
Yeah, this is so powerful and hard-hitting, and just like with brilliant metaphors throughout. Wow. You know, like when she uses Picasso is abstract art there. And then she has a reference to Dorian Gray's where you see the reflection, you know, the stretched canvas. And she just goes down, and this is just like a smash in the balls for, you know. This is just like, you know, you had no business, like, you know, may having children here, because you just pour them, you know, you drop them in, like, they absorb your kerosene, and you know, they with your poor parenting skills. And yeah, the way, but the, you know, I say it so crudely, but the way she says it, wow, it's just amazing. So just like Nutrinbon can write every time, it's just like, yeah, absolutely brilliant work.
Absolutely, great comment. Okay, and with that, I guess we're ready for our next one, and we'll all get to take a break, because this one has a SoundCloud, which I will pull. So this is Eric Svensson's Rainbows Around the Sun.
Rainbows around the sun. Jive with the globetrotter shaman tribe. Imbibe a new line dance. Take deep drags on the wonderment hubbly-bubbly hookup pipe. Rainbows around the sun, a new weather phenomenon. Waltz Wagner with Strauss impetus. Play the cello like a guitar. Globetrotter shamans may never leave their abodes. Body may stay in designated frame, gilded, gaudy, or otherwise. But rainbows around the sun minds elope, travel roads less frequented, rutted, serrated footpaths sought out. Vistas beckon around familiar haunts. Globetrotter shaman tribe howls at the moon. Sound waves penetrate the dark side of the moon. Veneration of shamans like Socrates and yourself. Ageless blips and bleeps that show up on society's rigorous radar screen. Lilliputians, leopards, and field lilies squeezed into gilded baroque frames. Albinoni in G minor. Gulliver globetrotter shamans always pop up. Somehow squared dirges politely shimmy aside to make way for ditties. Arm bangles become rainbows around the sun. Wonderment remains unframable. Hang drum, pummel, hum drum into humdinger syncopation. Malleable maelstrom media with Albinoni in G minor, all shamans. Round pegs don't like square frames. May never leave your village, town, city or country, because you're Gulliver to your Lilliputian people, not nasty and demeaning, but in true acceptance of their choice. In your heart of hearts, you know you're their rainbow around an off-kilter sun or moon or otherwise. End poem.
Thank you for the sound, Cloud. Eric. Okay, so, yeah, and this was another prompt that people chose, prompt six, which is, the only people who see the whole picture are the ones who step out of the frame. And I really like where Eric went with this. In your heart of hearts, you know their rainbow around an off-kilter sun or moon or otherwise. He captures the magic of Rushdie's magical realism in this surreal globe-trotting dance beyond Newtonian physics, around the sun, and beyond a step out of the frame, indeed. Very well done. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I love that last stanza. You know, he captures that prompt so well. Round pegs don't like square frames. Yeah, they don't like, you know, to be, you know, the stuck like in a frame, but they may never leave your village, town, city, or country, so they never go outside. And the way his reference to Gulliver, you know, Gulliver's travels there, where he's stuck with the people there, and you know, they never step out of their frame. They never look farther than their own little world and their own little what they believe in. And I think this was just absolutely wonderfully, like Eric can do it every time. I mean, it's amazing, you know, the way he worded this whole thing. Just bravo, Eric, on this, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, that was really insightful, Naomi. I hadn't gotten that, the Lilliputians as metaphors. Nice catch. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really enjoy the gravitas that Eric brings with his readings. He's got a wonderful reading voice. You guys gave great comments. I'm not going to dwell on your points there. But Waltz Wagner was Strauss' impetus. Play the cello like a guitar. Globetrotter shamans may never leave their abodes. Body may stay in designated frame, gilded, gaudy, or otherwise. And, you know, if we are content to stay within our frames, that's one thing. But, you know, we also need to step out of ourselves, watching every move we make from a distance, you know, at one remove, understanding the need to step out of the frame, to become that rainbow. I thought it was a brilliantly fashioned piece.
Indeed.
Absolutely. Great, great comment. Okay, so where would you like to go next?
Well, you're the next reader, and I'm putting the piece up now. Oh, no, that's another audio. Hang on a second. We've got a lot of audios. Huh?
No. So this one, actually, there is an audio available, but the voice
right.
is kind of difficult.
Right,
yeah.
So why don't you give that a read then?
I can, yep, I'll give it a read, sure. Okay, so this is a poem by Jasper called A Photograph. An unreachable tunnel, deep in the shadowy gloom, where craters loom like gray flowers, hugging the barbarian waves of Agchi, the frozen crystals capturing your journey of 1,000 miles on a 4x6 cozy sack, ringing the victory bell after a bloody battle in the arena of full billowy clouds. bracing for an adventure ride around the globe where the air is shattered at its blink. The mountains go for a toss. The garden of stars to pluck from. The skies to swing across. The ecstasy of a mother to see a flower blooming out of her womb. Big brown eyes filled with mischief and excitement. When you ran into a collision, a miracle hung around your waist. And thereafter never left your shadow. Your sublime smile transcends through the evening velvet sky, delighting the moon, shedding the painful tears. The sun dips in glass. Apricot clouds cover me as I steal your memory but leaving mine. End poem.
Well read.
Hey, Naomi, thanks so much. Naomi, if we can start with you.
So he chose the quote, "The only people who see the whole frame picture are the ones who step out of the frame." He chose that one again. An unreachable tunnel deep in the shadowy gloom where craters loom like gray flowers. He starts out right away, you know, capturing your journey of 1,000 miles, ringing the victory bell after a bloody battle in the arena of full billowy clouds. I love his allusion, you know, to the clouds, the velvet sky, and then he goes into apricot clouds down deeper. I love Jaskarin's rites. They're so... they have such a spirituality about them, and you know, he uses nature in such a beautiful way. I'll have to reread this a couple of times to grasp the whole meaning, you know, to go into that quote there. I'm sure Laurent can do it better than me. So I'll leave Laurent... speak on this poem, but just beautifully written, Jaskarin, and my gracious, just all the way down,
yep.
Just captivated me.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. No, I thought that was a great comment. And Laurent, what do you think?
I enjoyed this a great deal. In fact, I thought it was an exceptional poem, almost a magical piece. And it did take a couple of reads before I realized. So it's a story of a journey, presumably taken by a parent, to see a daughter who had just had a baby. She does a wonderful job of describing that adventure ride around the globe, which I assume is in an airplane, where the air is shattered at its blink, the mountains go for a toss, the garden of stars to pluck from, the skies to swing across. When you're in an airplane, all those things, at least to me, seem true. And then he sees the ecstasy of a mother, to see a flower blooming out of her womb. And I absolutely love the a miracle hung around your waist, and thereafter it never left your shadow, the pregnant stomach. And I love the sublime smile transcending the evening velvet sky. And then the sun dips in glass. What a beautiful way of saying the sun is sinking behind the ocean, and the apricot clouds cover me, those wonderfully colored clouds at sunset. As the plane brings her back to where she lived, but you know, she's stolen, or he's stolen the memories, but left his behind as well. I thought it was a glorious piece.
Mm-hmm.
Great analysis. Yeah, you know, I thought it was a very strong kaleidoscopic word painting of life in all its varied seasons. So you have traveler, the different perspective, the plane, the mother, the child, all the different aspects of life and perspective, you know, to step out of the frame, to be in an airplane above it all afterwards. Very clever, very well done, I thought. And great analysis by everyone, by the way. Okay, and with that, let's move on to our next one.
Okay, give me just 1 second here. There's a lot of audios here, so I can't just grab them. All right, I got one here.
Okay.
All right, let's go backwards. All right, so I'm the next reader. I'm putting up a piece by Atul Banerjee called Where Anger Matters Rightfully. The principles of all-encompassing Christianity, love self, less care, and forgive others. The traditional messages of the Christian faith, albeit in this contemporary times, where look what man has done to more men, reducing them to awful, reflecting Picasso quotes. Today, Christmas heralds, but just reflect. Is every corner, every soul, notwithstanding the societal stance or position, getting his rightful share of the pristine Christmas cake? If Christ was a human entity as of today, and more metaphorical crazy imagination, if the great literary poet and author Salman Rushdie was an impartial judge, what Christmas present would the Christ aspire from Santa? Mind you, it's a contemporary world in fires, lecherous flames, a blazing inferno of atrocities, vengeance. Intriguing if Jesus would still adhere to his Jesuit principles. In fact, does that really work magic today? Maybe our judge, the great Salman Rushdie, has an answer to substitute Christ's words. Fury. Yes, being contemplative enough, so much injustice and societal mallets, the language of today is indeed anger, frightful exhibit of the same. End poem.
Nicely read. What Christmas present would the Christ aspire from Santa? Maybe our judge, the great Salman Rushdie, has an answer to substitute Christ's word, fury. And I thought it was a really strong speaking of truth to our contemporary postmodern cynicism. And I enjoyed the critique of today's injustice and malice. Very strong philosophical and spiritual poem. And Naomi, your thoughts?
This was, like you said, a very, very powerful and thought-provoking right. And, like she said, yes, being contemplative enough, so much injustice and societal malice, the language of today is indeed anger, rightful exhibit of the same. She says it all in this poem, what would Jesus say if he came back to earth in these days, with what everything is going on. just an amazing right here by Atul Banerjee. I greatly appreciated this right. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Great comment. And Laurent, as reader, I'll give you final word.
Yeah, the old question. Especially when you're engaged with friends, having a few beers. What would Christ do if he came back today? Would he come back as himself? Would he come back as a rich man? Would he come back as a beggar? Would he be an important figure, an unimportant figure? So when he says Christ's words, fury, yes, being contemplative enough, so much injustice and societal malice, the language of today is indeed anger, rightful exhibit of the same. You almost have to think that Christ is going to be fairly irritated with everything he sees around him. It's really a pity that today's Picasso-reflecting figures have pinned all their life hopes on a one-off. If you think about it, it really is time for the second coming, and anger is definitely the season. Love the poem.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay. I guess we're ready for our next one.
All right. I'm going to put up a piece with a fair Naomi to read. And it is up, Naomi. Oh, Daisies for Estella.
Daisies for Estella by Steam Machine. You are the... Oh, boy. You are the light and the and shadow of death, a geography of a sweetness ripe to kiss. To understand your essence, no guide was needed, no labyrinth, mind was wholesome. I like the way you pick daisies, putting them in a crystal vase where they never wilt. For your Excalibur heart was pure magic and cut the wasting darkness. You kept your house tidy like your life. All warm words you uttered fondly, remembered by others. Count me among your admirers. You administered the cure for a broken heart. Now that you are deceased, I trip on stony problems, unable to see you even among the stars. I put a vase of daisies on your grave. They remind me of you, only you. End poem.
Nice
great read.
Read,
Naomi. So we do have someone on hold. Let me bring them on.
It's me, Felon.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, Felon.
Hi.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to have you joining us. So I actually have someone else that just came on. Let me bring them on. Hi, 419. You're on the air.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
It's Kel.
Oh,
hi, Kel.
Welcome.
Hey, Kel.
Hello,
everyone.
Join us. So we've got a rushy party suddenly. Okay, so Felon, did you have a chance to hear Daisies for Estella?
Yes, Felon.
Yeah?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. This actually was very, it drew you in just on the first line. You were the light, the shadow of death, the geography of sweetness, right? And it goes on, and there's, you know, and the sadness at the end, you know, I put a vase of daisies on your grave. It reminds me of you, only you. This is just such heart, you know, it just broke my heart. It's my mom and dad, and I think that it really does well with the prompt. Great job.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Kel, did you have a chance to hear the poem?
No, I'm trying to read it right now.
Okay. Okay, well, let's give you a chance to do that. Meanwhile, I will comment on it. I love how he took this rushy quote, turned it on its head, showing how loss of his love, Estella, has led to dissociation from the natural world. All the encroachments of that world are simply transformed into her. And isn't that what we as humans do so often? Transform everything we see into the one that we are grieving, that we've lost, until it's almost second nature. I thought it was insightful and heartbreaking. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah. The world can be difficult, well nigh impossible to understand, full of venal dishonesty, but that one individual
cuts the waking darkness, as the poet says. You are the light and shadow of depth, a geography of a sweetness ripe to kiss. To understand your essence, no guide was needed. Your labyrinth mind was wholesome and now gone. You know, the daisies to me are a tribute to a clarity no longer available. I feel the same way, in a way, about my father, who always had the answers, at least intellectually, if not emotionally. It's a powerful work.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Cal, did you have a chance to read through it?
Yes, actually I did. I thought it was really a sentimental and reverent, appreciative poem for someone he loved very much. And the emotion in it is immense and heartbreaking. But, you know, you can, more than anything, you can detect the reverence that he felt for this woman. And it was absolute and just very beautifully done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, so I should have asked this earlier, but does anyone have to read and run? Does everyone have time?
I can say for a little bit, not long. I'll work tomorrow.
Okay. Okay. All right, so you've got that in the back of your mind there, Laurent, and with that, I am turning it back to you for our next poem.
Well, I'll tell you what then. Why don't we start taking the pieces that the people on the show have put up and start with
okay.
Richard's, obviously the first one here, and we can get right to everyone else is very quick. All right, Richard, when you see it, you can go ahead.
Okay, so I chose We Were Language's Magpies by Nature, stealing whatever sounded bright and shiny. And there are voices for this. I'm going to do as many of them as I can, but when you try and do too many accents, they can get a little bit jumbled. So I'll do a bunch of them, but I won't do them all probably. So this is called From the Moment I Heard. From the moment I heard Mum's faux highbrow London accent borrowed from the gaffer and his missus, rimming with fractal echoes off shiny Shakespearean mirrors and brawny Saxon dialects, I knew I'd sing. And Dad sang, old Brooklyn Eagles song, whose blue-collar wings were fast clipped by wobbly Depression-era lean times, so I knew I'd sing. And the rest, Ratsy, Kane, Steady, Willie May X from Winston-Salem, then fourth-generation Irish brogue schoolmates from Hell's Kitchen, sharp-tongued, third-gen little girl, and their taught and plaid Catholic school drops, along with 70s TV dialect. Be plain, boss, I'd memorize and magpie them all. Each voice now a long-forgotten song, imperfectly preserved like weekly sealed jam jars set along musty shelves between filmy protective wax of either ear. End poem.
Nicely read, Richard. I really like this piece.
Oh, wow, yes.
Yeah, but let me start by saying the language is simply nonpareil. You did a really good job with this. And I will quote, and the rest, raspy, cane-steadied Willie May X, Winston-Salem, them fourth-generation Irish brogue schoolmates from Hell's Kitchen, sharp-tongued, third-gen Little Italy girls, and their tartan plaid Catholic school garb, along with 70s TV dialects. The plain boss. I've memorized and magpie them all. And it's true. We hear someone speak in an interesting fashion or an accent, our ear picks it up, It's almost as if we want to express ourselves in their voice, in their sing-song. And it's a wonderful realization of the need to be ourselves with our own song to sing, leaving other songs to their owners while not denying their influences on us. I thought you did a great job with this, Richard.
Thanks a lot.
All right, and Naomi, please.
Yeah, wow, the way you captured all these different people who were, and, you know, and moments in your life and things that captivated you and that marked you, and you know, you kept them, and and it's so true. Like Laura said, you know, you remember. I think sound is one of the things that you remember, like a song that's being sang or a voice of a person. And then with the last verse there, that's an amazing verse, the way you use those sealed jam jars between, and then, you know, on the musty shelves between filmy protective wax of either ear. That's just amazing stanza there to finish off this poem. This is just a fabulous, Richard. I just enjoyed this so much. Just so deep, right?
Thanks, Naomi. Very, very insightful. Okay, and Fallon, please.
Wow, this really just took me back. It's not so much of how it sounds, it's the person that's saying it, or how they use it in a sentence, or like my family up north, we're like, can you get us a soda? Well, here in the south, we're like, you got a Coca-Cola? You know, it's all about how you say it, and it's just that thing that just brings it back to you, and that's what this did for me. This was a very nice write, and it just brought back memories to me, so thank you for sharing that.
Thanks, Phil, and well said.
Thank you, Cal.
And Cal, please.
Well, right now I can hear all kinds of accents. Naomi with her French. Felon, her southern accent. Yourself, Laurent. You have a little bit of a southern accent. And, you know, Richard has a little bit of that, you know, New England twang. You know, it's just beautiful. I remember when I was in Australia and listening to all the accents of all the different, because there were so many nationalities, even in my neighborhood. It was amazing. We had a Lebanese woman across the street and some Hindus down the street, and it's just, wow. So this, you know, it just brought me back, you know, into those moments. You know, I love the Australian accent. It's so much like the English accent, but don't dare tell them that.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, it's awesome. It is very well done. The different expressions were spot on, fantastic. And I'm with Naomi and Felon. I really like this last verse. Each voice now a long-forgotten song, imperfectly preserved. You know, you hear things and you remember them, but whether or not you can sing them or speak them yourself is a different thing, but you can always remember how they sounded, and that's beautiful. And I love all your accents. You know, it just gives us all personality and individuality, and it's beautiful. So well done, Richard.
Thanks so much, Cal.
Excellent comment,
now
Cal.
We're ready for our next one.
All right, I'm the next reader. I'm going to put my piece up. This one is called "The Way Is Closed, a Struggle," and it's based on Salman Rushdie's quote from the Satanic Verses, "Not all possibilities are open to us." Beware the diamonds of the sky, splintering as they slowly die, fiery lights raining down, fractions falling on the naked came eye,
of individual manifest destiny, raising a soliloquy of welts of flesh, enduring the blistering without ever questioning, should we be anything else but the rusted skins we wear? Specious minds teach us that. We endure the lifelong agony of careful pretense, duplicity of intent being no measure of failure, as the rabbit hole is sought. Atomic weights of awaiting the vast vagaries of chance. Baubles emulating gems turn eyes inwards, rejecting a bewilderment of choices, glinting bright in life's dark snowfield. Iron purpose holds a man to his true north, bearing his heavy cross while stumbling down a path with no signposts, replete with hidden curves and horizons only dimly glimpsed. Disparate straightaways don't always require speed, but the careful closing of synapses. Don't miss your exit. There's no turning back the past. Time, the knife blade ever sharp, separates flesh from possibilities. Apples are peeled and cored, discarded to earth, where seeds find their toehold and rich verdure, chancing deep ordure. Generations of facile babes fated to suckle at dry, dusty teeth, eyeing scintillating diamonds of the sky, tilting at windmills, driven cruelly fast by the lash of a bellicose gale, sprung undying from an invisible Olympus. Old gods bring a hammer hand, binding us with the silence of soft chains, brocades of unyielding straitjackets, even as we struggle Houdini-like against their bondage. End poem.
Wow, what a beautiful read. I loved where you went with the Rushdie prompt, asking us to explore questions of fate, temperament, and free will as it relates to art and the artist. Lots of slings and arrows of outrageous fortune are endured because easier possibilities are not open to us as artists. Now, I identify with this one in a quite visceral way, but it helped me. Your poem helped me because at least I know that you feel it too, and that made it slightly less painful to endure. One of the things that that make the artist's path a little bit more bearable is the fact that we have each other and we know what it's like to have certain possibilities closed off from us. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay, let's get you some comments. Naomi.
This is amazing. You know, that it's written to that prompt, like right to the T. I have a hard time picking out just one part of this that I like better than the other. The last stanza is particularly hard hitting and thought provoking. But also, you know, when you say iron purpose holds a man to his true north, bearing his heavy cross while stumbling down a path with no signpost. Sorry. Replete with hidden curves and horizons only dimly glimpsed. Now, sometimes you want to go somewhere, but, you know, you see it, but then things happen around you that are out of your control, and you can't reach that destination. So I think this was amazingly well written, Laura. Bravo.
Merci.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Fallon, your thoughts?
I must say, Laurent, I had tears because I might be wrong on this. that this is like the periodic table of life and what is bestowed upon us from our higher powers, and that nothing is alone. We support every element of every element. It's nothing can be weighted in to it. It, you know, it's all given to us as one, and that God has really touched me a lot. Where'd that one thing go? It just really took me just like out of my seat. So it's really got me. Where did that? Where the apples? Where did it start at? Something about the cord and the apples or something. It just took me, I mean, I can't believe this is just, here we go. Time, the knife blade ever so sharp, separates flesh from possibilities. Apples are peeled and cored, discarded to earth where seeds find a toehold and which needed chance in deep odor. That means God tossed his seed, and whatever happened, where it landed and how it planted and came about is what we did. And we all still feel each other, and every element makes up everything. So this was just, wow. Very clever, intelligent. One of your best friends.
Thank you, Felon. Thank you very much.
Awesome.
Great comment, Felon. And let's close it out with Kel.
Oh, Felon, this is rich. Rich in metaphor. And, you know, the imagery is just amazing, Lord. I'm with Naomi. I really like this iron purpose, holds a man to his true north, bearing the heavy cross while stumbling down a path with 90 signposts. It's just, the whole thing is absolutely, you know, beautiful and true to the prompt. But this one just really caught my attention more than anything, because it seems like no matter how hard we try to stay on course, there's always going to be something that's going to pull us away and take us away from that. You know, and sometimes, you know, we've managed to get where we need to go, but it's always a struggle. So this is really a beautiful piece of work. Absolutely wonderful.
Thank you, dear. Appreciate that.
Great comment, Cal. Okay, so where would you like to go next, Laurent?
Well, I'm looking for Naomi's piece. I don't know. Are you all right
so
to
Naomi,
read Naomi, your piece?
No,
so
you
Naomi,
better put the audio on.
Yep. I was going to say, we've got a choice, so we'll give your voice a rest, and we will hit the audio for you. Give me just a second.
Yeah.
Beneath papered walls, a society wherein lifeless worms float at the bottoms of bottles of tequila, drowning in conformity, where we roam endlessly entrapped inside mind-papered walls, pecking holes through our brains, bleeding beneath pasted paper cuts of politically correct protocols. As we secretly tattoo into our skins the colorful flights of insouciant butterflies in the comfort of our cocooned lives, too terrified of the surge of hissing serpent tongues if we dare take flight. Oh yes, let us shout hallelujah, pray, and say amen with our legs on cross shamelessly, naked, just begging for it with our thighs spread wide, while rifles are proudly hung atop chimneys beside a cross and portraits of our children as we listen horrified to the news about another mass school shooting. Following the golden rule, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, unless they are of another race, religion, sexual orientation, or God forbid their lawn be greener than ours. All of us wanting to eat steak, even when we only deserve bologna. looking to others for the cause of all our problems instead of staring into a mirror. In a world wherein 1% possess all the wealth, while half of humanity lives on less than $5 a day, and only one child out of five gets to go to school, where a dollar sign is more important than the birth of a newborn baby, with plastered mouths and plastic smiles. Let us continue to just whimper at everything, complaining about anything as we struggle to walk, oh, so, so straight and righteous in a world where all our sidewalks are cracked, twisted, and slanted.
Excellent, SoundCloud. So yeah, I'm not sure if everyone could read the quote by Rushdie, so I put it into the chat as well. And the quote is, a poet's work to name the unnameable, to point at frauds, to take sides, start arguments, shape the world, and stop it from going to sleep. So says the irreverent, satirical Baal in the Satanic Verses. And a great quote for this very powerful poem. And I had read this and commented on this poem a year ago, and I thought about writing something else, but when I read my comments, I was like, I don't know, I think I kind of liked what I said the first time around, which is, I took the excerpt from your piece, which is, looking to others for the cause of all our problems instead of staring into a mirror. And boy, that's, it's so true and so hard. It's one of the hardest things to do is to look into that mirror and own our mistakes and our flaws. And you take a wide angle expose, taking no prisoners in this speaking of truth to power. Just an amazing piece, and it really does hold up. I thought it was incredibly powerful the first time I read it, and this time, you know, even more so. So great job, Naomi.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Yeah, now, originally, and I'm guilty of the same thing you are, of having read this a year ago. Originally, this was written with the categories in mind of society and hypocrisy. But despite that, I like the way that it fit in to tonight's readings. As she says, as we secretly tattoo into our skin the colorful flights of insouciant butterflies in the comfort of our cocooned lives, too terrified of the surge of hissing serpent tongues, if we dare take flight. You know, that says so much about people trying their best. They're trying to come out, trying to do things. But, you know, the haters are there. Naomi, this is powerful writing. It's a struggle through life, dealing with society in a world where all our sidewalks are cracked, twisted, and slanted. Really a pretty stunning work.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura.
Great comment, Laurent. And Kel, your thoughts.
Oh, my goodness, Naomi. This is one powerful piece. I don't know if there were very many atrocities or hypocrisies that you didn't add into this. It's just really so well done. Wow. Jesus. it's frightening what people do to each other, what we do to ourselves. Right, you know, look into the mirror. That's where you need to start. It reminds me of that Michael Jackson song, The Man in the Mirror. You know, take a look at yourself and see if that's where we should start, you know, because it's got to start somewhere. You know, there's something wrong with this world, and it's sad. It's really, really sad. And this is a very well done piece, very powerful. Well done. I can't say it enough, honey.
Thank you. Thank you, Cal.
Excellent comment, Cal. And Fallon, your thoughts?
Oh, I really like this. This is really this is a very good sarcastic to the point. And what really sang to me was, oh, yes, let us shout hallelujah, pray and say amen. Our legs unclothed, shameless, and naked, just begging for it. We have thighs spread wide. We're always looking for that good effing because, you know, there are stuff out there like, I'm victim, victim, victim. And yet when you're getting hammered, they're like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I should just get my legs crossed a little bit longer before I run my mouth. You know, I'm guilty of doing that too, but I think it's just very to the point and how we always seem to want a certain thing, but when the outcome comes different, we're like, no, we kind of start, we call backpedaling out. It's too late then, great, drowned in your own shit. So I really like this. Very, very clever.
Thank you, Fallon.
Great comment, Fallon. Okay, Laurent, I see that you've put the next piece up.
Yep, Fallon's piece. Fallon, give it a read.
Yeah, send myself back on me. I'm sorry. Okay, it's called Rushing the End, and it goes to the prompt of, to understand just one life, you have to swallow the world. Words of wisdom ring loud, walking heavy, putting in my rafters, as tongue weak between teeth of undertone. One echoing banter amongst myself. Damn, she's right. Mama in the kitchen cooking, humming a tune of her own song. I pause the melody with stating it aloud. Can't wait a couple more weeks. And I'm turning 21. Never even turning her attention in my direction. And she replies, after you're 21, on the next day, you'll be old like me. That little nook of knowledge blindsided me when I was celebrating 50. Impatient won't gather items collected in haste. It's like purchasing a pair of heels for a party, an invite you have yet to receive. Greedy statements weigh down future journeys. Only now do I enjoy moments before me, accepting the what-ifs, once seeking to swallow the world in one bite, oblivious to understanding the life I was gifted in one.
Great read. Thanks so much, Fallon. Laurent, if we can start with you.
You called my name, correct?
I did, yep.
Okay. This is quite something, Fallon. It's a very wise rite. Words of wisdom ring loud, walking heavy-footed within my rafters as my tongue weeps between teeth of an undertone. That, I thought, was just an absolutely brilliant line. You know, and as the journey, the one we all take, progresses, what ifs become what is. You have to stop and breathe the air of your life. And understand it, if you will. As you say, or as the prop says, to understand this one life, you have to swallow the world. Again, a very wise right fellow. Life has taught you much.
Thank you, Laurent. And I can still remember that day. I will never forget that day. She didn't even look at me. And you know, and it hit me when I was 50, like, holy shit, she was right. I turned around and all the time ago. Wow, wasted so much. Slow down and enjoy what you got. Don't try to eat the whole cake. Just take a little bitty piece. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Great comment there, Laurent. Yeah, I too really love this piece, Fallon. Accepting the what if one seeking to swallow the world, and one by oblivious to understanding the one life I was gifted. It's a relatively short poem, but it's chock full of philosophical wisdom. The lines are pregnant with sage advice that ironically a 20-year-old, 21-year-old usually can't grasp. Yet older, wiser human beings offer this advice and wisdom nonetheless, for that too is the nature of life. I thought beyond the excellent take on the Rushdie prompt, the poem reminded me of Kierkegaard. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forward. Life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. And I thought you really brought all that home in just very few lines. So it was an intensely personal way, too, that you have of doing things. So another great poem by you.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Kel, your thoughts.
Well, I love the personal right. That didn't come out right. This is a beautiful personal right. There we go. Very well done. Accepting the what is. One seeking to swallow the world in one bite, oblivious to understanding the one life I was gifted. When we're young, you know, can't think of the future. You know, you just don't. You're thinking right now. It's not until you get old like me and Laurent.
I'm old too.
That you realize how short life really is, and that you have to, you know, grasp it by the horns and just ride it out. You know, there's a whole lot more you can do. And this is really fantastic. I really appreciate this. I've got a son that's going to be 21 next month, and a granddaughter that's going to be 21 in June. So this is
Oh my God.
And she's going, oh, God.
Wow.
So this is fantastic. I really enjoyed this. Well,
thank you,
well, very well done.
Great comment, Kel. And so I'm going to have to apologize. I've got someone that's been on hold for almost 3 minutes. Let's bring them on.
Ooh.
667, you're on the air.
Hello. This is Martha.
Hi.
Hi,
Martha.
Hi. Hi, Martha.
Hi.
Welcome. Glad you could join us. Did you have a chance? Yeah, sure. Did you have a chance to hear Felon's poem?
No, I missed it.
Okay, that's okay. We haven't actually played your SoundCloud yet, so it's coming. Let's see, did I take all the, did Naomi comment yet?
No, I didn't.
I got sidetracked by someone being on hold. Go ahead, Naomi.
Yeah, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah, Felon, this is very, I have to say it captivated me and it brought me right into your right. You know, right from that first stanza, words of wisdom ring aloud, walking heavy-footed within my rafters as my tongue weeps between teeth of an undertone. And then you go into that personal, you know, moment there, memory, and that just, you know, it just brings you into the, and this is, it's just so captivating, this, right? I was totally involved in this and just like an enchanted way. And but it was so, you know, spoke such words of wisdom here, Felon. Just amazing. The way you composed the whole thing there, it's just amazing writing here. So, wow, bravo.
Thank you. That means a lot, guys, because this was my mother's words. They were not mine. I just merely was just sharing them. So that means a lot to me. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great comments, everyone. Okay, and with that, Laurent, we are ready for our next one.
Kel's piece is up. Kel, if you'd read it.
Yep, I've got to get back to it. Got it covered up.
Yeah, it's covered up.
Beg your pardon. Hang on one second.
Is it shape shifting?
Yeah,
I got it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Shape shifting thoughts by Kel Smiles. And this is from prompt 6. The only people who see the whole picture are the ones who step out of the frame. Thoughts of shifting shapes skim in shimmering flocks of avian flight, wavering in and out of consciousness, constantly changing, shifting, mindless. Think, processes caught, shape shifting, starlings fly, separating, flowing together in then back out, swirling around and about. Two sterling starlings swing away, settling into leafy branched nests, detached from the flocking waves, shape-shifting thoughts form a haven. End poem.
Great read, Cal. So I'm going to give Felon first word because I know you have to run.
Okay, thank you. I really like this a lot, for one, and it's got a little bit of a sort of like an alliteration to each one, and I think each stanza stands on its own. But the one I really like is think, because process is called shape shifting, starling, flight separating, flowing together in the back and then back out, twirling around and about. It's you have to take yourself, think, take yourself out of the picture and let what it's going to be. And don't be involved in it, and let the truth stand on its own, and don't put something into it that's not there. So, I think this made me think there, Ms. Cal. Excellent, right?
Thank you, Ellen.
Great comments, Ellen. Yeah, I too love this piece, Cal. Great metaphor drives the mystical poem of perspective, form, and transformation. Vivid imagery throughout, exquisite word painting. And, you know, I didn't catch this first time around, but when Felon called out think, that made me think of the 12-step recovery. It's one of the phrases is think. It's upside down, though. So I caught that second time around with a little bit of prompting. Great job. And Martha, your thoughts?
I just love it.
I love the title.
What?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I love it. The birds and the flight, it's just wonderful. I used to just love to watch the starlings fly. Brings back some good memories. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Great comment. And go ahead, Laura,
right,
your thoughts?
Yeah. For anyone who has seen, and I'm sure we've all seen, these vast, vast clouds of birds wheeling, separating, coming together again. As she says, think, processes caught, shape-shifting starlings fly, separating, flowing together in, then back out, whirling, twirling around and about. It's impressive how clouds of literally thousands, thousands of birds can all turn and move at the same time. You have to ask yourself, what is the signal? What do they see? What do they respond to? But here we have, in direct response to the quote, two sterling starlings who swing away, settling into leafy branch nests, detached from the flocking waves, shape-shifting thoughts from a haven. In other words, they have stepped out of the frame at some point. And I just thought it was just a great, great cover of the prompt.
Thank you, Laurent.
You're welcome.
Great comment, Laurent. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, Kel, I just thought this showed an amazing creative side to you and a great cleverness and wittiness to have chosen, you know, this the flocking, the flying of the birds, and then the two birds separating away, like Laura said, to capture that whole idea of stepping away from the frame there. Just an amazing, amazing write, and very brilliantly, thought out write, and your rhyme and rhythm is impeccable in this. Just sings along. Just very, very well done.
Thank you, Naomi. I was actually trying my hand at metaphor because I'm trying to figure this out.
Oh, well, you hit it on the nail, girl, because this is amazing.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And with that, we're ready for our next one.
All right, I just put Martha's piece up.
Yep. Now, Martha, you have a SoundCloud. You want me to play it?
Yes.
Okay, let me do that.
Let's Make Some Noise by Martha Gattle. Let's stand up and make some noise. Make sure everybody hears our voice. Stand up and make noise there. Make everybody stop and stare. Make sure they hear just what you say. Get their attention in every way. Don't be quiet, you're not dead. Stand up and say what needs to be said. Because we are all alive today. And we all have something to say. Let's raise our voices to the sky. We can be quiet after we die. Why should someone else have all the fun? Let's make some noise under the sun. Let's raise our voices, make them loud. Make others wonder what it's all about. Because we are all alive today, and we all have something to say. So let's raise our voices to the sky. We can be quiet after we die. Why should we be quiet and not heard? Let's make sure everyone hears every word. Because life is but a brief space of time. And there will be nothing to say after we die.
Great SoundCloud. I love these. Laurent, if we could start with you.
Certainly. You did a grand job on this, Martha, really. The share is much appreciated. Make sure they hear just what you say. Get their attention in every way. Don't be quiet. You're not dead. Stand up and say what needs to be said. And I hope you stand up loudly, too, proclaiming your good while you can, while we may. Because, as you say, Martha, life is but a brief space of time, and there will be nothing to say after we die. True words, my dear, true words. Love the piece.
Yep. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great, great comment, Laurent. And I, too, love this. I thought it was a wonderful take on the Rushdie quote. That carpe diem vibe is transmitted, felt throughout, and the SoundCloud, as always, really brings it alive, and it just colors it in a way that is uniquely yours. And it kind of drives home your carpe diem message as well. To make some noise, sing, make a joyful noise. Great job.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Cal, your thoughts?
Well, this reminds me, something's always reminding me, something I always try to teach my kids is to speak their minds. You know, you have an opinion, it's worth hearing. We don't always have to agree with it, but it's yours. And that's what I'm getting from this. We all have something to say, and we all have the right to say what we need to say. And we should have fun with our, you know, we should have fun, you know, sing and laugh and be loud and be heard. Because, you know, when you're dead, you can't make a sound. So this is just really a very beautiful, eloquent piece. I really quite enjoyed it, Martha.
Thank you.
And Naomi, I'm giving you final word.
Yeah, well, this, Martha, sounds like a party at my house with all my kids and there and my grandchildren running around and singing and, you know, arguing and screaming. And yeah, and this has such deep wisdom all throughout, Martha, and it's so excellently composed. And just an amazing, amazing song here, and with a deep message of wisdom. So thank you very much.
Great comment. Okay, and with that, we'll move on to our next one.
All right, and with about 20 minutes left, if we can truncate our comments just slightly, I'd like to try to get at least three more in. Now, regarding the next reader, Richard, I put up a piece by Tim Michio.
Okay, so this is Tim Michio, Were We Ever on Vanilla Land? One, the last of blighted huckleberry leaves drop like dead weight of black pepper, suffocating the limelight of bumping youth, tossed and turned into unguarded sunk relief in a glacier room of hall pellets on platter, sausage trees gaze upon a rise solitude, kicking pebbles against frozen pleawort as oolong tea bags trickle into crackle land. Two, one, two, three through 21. Tell me how many more retrogrades shall be blamed before you agree that neither stars nor planets are at fault here. The moon rises after daytime's avalanche, not rushing through the pupils and cones the way that midnight musk gushes out, wet-nosed lapdog pushing me around. Three. Blue was too cold for spring travelers, the skies as seraphs and fauna pounds, and I stumbled around a frantic search how to be retrained in your mind's eye, brought paprika visions of tended blight for strange shadows on vanilla land, wandering seraphim carried through to the last of blighted huckleberry leaves. End of poem. Laurent, let's start comments with you. What'd you think?
I adore the phrasing and the language in this more than ever, and I love Vanilla Land as a place. I mean, we all know what how good a vanilla ice cream tastes, especially on a hot day. But you know, it's kind of nice. It's bland. It satisfies, and I guess that's what a Vanilla Land would do. But you begin with the last of blighted huckleberry leaves drop like dead weight of black pepper, suffocating limelight of bumpkin youth tossed and turned into unguarded sunk relief. There is a lot of silence. There's a lot of sorrow in this particular piece. I don't know if melancholy is the right word for it, but it seems to be. And I really enjoyed the 1, 2, 3 through 21. Tell me how many more retrogrades. That was a nice part as well. Great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, I found that this was there's a lot of beauty and sorrow, and she captured it in this exquisite word painting of melancholia, born of our futile search for vanilla land solace. It's a beautiful piece. And tell your thoughts.
I don't know why, but I really like this second area, 1, 2, 3 through 21. Tell me how many more retrogrades shall be blamed before you agree that neither stars nor planets are at fault here. The moon rises after a daytime's avalanche. I mean, that's just really fantastic metaphors. I mean, all through it is just the images are really amazing. But I really like that one. You know, it's shouldn't be putting your blame into things that, you know, aren't to be blamed. You know, there's a lot of other possibilities for why things are the way they are. And this is just really a lovely piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Martha, I'll give you final words.
I thought it was great. I love the imagery and the pictures. It was just beautiful the way she wove the food references to it. It was really nice.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, let's move on for our next piece there, Laurent.
Okay. I'm going to read Pam Ray's poem. It's called The Language of Love Between Strangers. The word potluck is neither shiny or new, yet somehow it draws us to it with a humdrum conjuring food, company, and conversation calling to the emptiness of our spirit. Potluck colors itself with the embrace of generations, with music and laughter, with grilled sausage and sauerkraut salad. It is recipes shared and recipes kept secret. The taste of the word is savored on the tongue, relished on the heart. Serendipity, petrichor, luminous, epiphany, sumptuous. These are beautiful words that flow like a gentle stream, but flutter about like fey folk of shimmering glens. Let the language of romance, spilt from the ink of history, let masters of prose describe the elegance of moonlight and roses. Let them all crow like bragging cocks to the hem of Saul. Potluck, which fills the mouth with a thickness of porridge and a spit of tobacco. You are the roll of the dice, summer's last will and testament, the cast iron pan, the sturdy grip of Oma stirring the pot. You are that which feeds angels in disguise, the breaking of bread so that strangers may part as friends. End poem.
What a great read, Laurent. You really did it justice. I love this tightly woven metaphor that shows how each of us is made resilient, richer, by sharing in life's potluck. Just an amazing piece of work. And Kel, your thoughts.
Well, once again, it brings back memories of when I was a kid, and we'd go to potluck dinners at the church every last Sunday of the month. And it was just an amazing time, you know, sit around talking and trying to, you know, all the different dishes, especially dessert, you know, I was a kid. This is just really well done. I love potluck dinners.
and all the conversation and the fellowship that it provides. And this was just a very beautiful poem.
Absolutely, great comment. And Martha, your thoughts?
Well, I'm with Cal. I used to go to potluck dinners when I was in church, and I thought they were wonderful. Get to know the people and such wonderful food and good times. I loved every one of them. And this is beautiful memories.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Laurent, I'll give you final word.
Well, I've got to just say to Pam, God bless, because her poem left me as warm inside as a July day. Potluck ties it all together. Breaking bread is an act with historical and biblical notes that she references so well. Food, company, and conversation calling to the emptiness of our spirit. The breaking of bread so that strangers may part as friends. As usual, Pam, fine work.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. Great comments, everyone. Okay, so the next piece.
Okay. Now, Naomi, do you want to read one more, or do you want me to skip you?
Naomi had to go.
Okay, is Felon still with us?
Felon had to go as well.
Okay, so that would make our next reader, Kel. All right. All right, I got thrown off my feed by people dropping. Give me just one second here. Okay. Putting it up. Sorry to be so slow at this moment.
That's okay.
Okay, Kel, when you see it.
Okay. Once a prisoner by blatant thieves. There was a time when things were simple. You could stare at something for hours and it would not change as time would stand still. Now everything is complex and nothing makes sense. Where caterpillars morph and sensual beauty, but die days later after breaking out of the cocoon. As soon as my cage door was flung open and the horizon shined upon me again, I wanted to turn back because I wasn't who I was. I think I should rather quit trying to be the person they knew and be the person I am. End poem.
Great read, Cal. Yeah, I think I should rather quit trying to be the person they knew and be the person I am. I thought this was a really strong, right? That quest for our authentic selves is a strong theme that runs throughout the body of Rushdie's work, and I think it was captured quite well, the struggle quite well in this poem. Great job. And Laurent, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Laurent?
Yeah, I'm chattering away on mute. Sorry about that. Given the time,
okay.
I'm going to put my comment down in text, and I think we have time for
okay.
just one more, perhaps. All right.
Okay.
And this is going to be, where is it? Okay, here we go. This is going to be for Martha. And she can deal with the poet's name. Mahar Thalani, I think.
Okay, let's see.
The only people who see the whole picture.
Okay, got it. Martha Lania, 848. The only people who see the whole picture are the ones who step out of the frame. The world is filled with things we cannot see, beyond the length and height and breadth of earth, and this is why we mortals pray to thee. We grope in darkness or would blinded be by the bright streamers of our paths to death. The world is filled with things we cannot see. Of all dimensions, we see only three, and dimly. Time as we look back at birth, and this is why we mortals pray to thee. And when at night our heaven's panoply lies open and earth's gravity is cursed, the world is filled with things we cannot see. When overwhelmed by inhumanity, we try to understand what life is worth, then this is why we mortals pray to thee. Seeing and knowing all mortality are opposites, thus we resort to faith. The world is filled with things we cannot see, and this is why we mortals pray to thee.
Well read, Martha. Great job. Yeah, I thought this was a wonderful devotional take on the prompt. The prompt being only those who see the whole picture are the ones who step out of the frame. And then the poet put underneath, no human can see the big picture. I thought the rhyming verse gave it almost a liturgical vibe that was quite satisfying. And Cal, I'll give you a final word on this piece.
Well, I thought it was really well done. The wording is just fantastic. And, you know, the spirituality and devotion in it as well are really very awesome. Well done.
Great comment. Yep. And so do we have a lot of poetry left? Did we kind of make it through, Laurent?
Well, we've got 4 minutes, and I think we have one poem left.
Oh, great. Let's do it.
Okay. Let's do that. I don't think this one's been read. If I'm wrong, please correct me. This is by Adrian 41062. And
that one has not been read.
Well, why don't you read that for us there, my friend?
Okay, sure. So this is Adrian 41062.
Yep.
Not all avenues. Is our life predetermined? But I thought we had free will. We don't know all possibilities, but we try and fail still. We try, we fail, we get hurt, then pick ourselves up again. We learn to do the things we can. When we slip, we know we are to blame. Knowing as we grow in life, there is places we can't reach or go. Not all possibilities are open to us. But now, I just go with the flow. End poem. All right, so I'm showing that we've got a minute and a half. So I do have a comment here, a strong philosophical offering exploring fate, free will, and the nature of life's journey. So we're running out of time, so as opposed to fighting the clock, I encourage everyone to put their comments in writing after this poem, well-written offering, and I will go ahead and encourage people to join us in a half an hour for Pam's show. I'm not sure what the topic is, but she always puts together an amazing two-hour poetry show, and I know we've got open mic tomorrow night with Phil and you, Laurent. So please join us for that as well. And finally, I'd like to thank our callers, Felon, Naomi, Cal, Martha, and a special thanks to you, Laurent, for helping me out tonight in Neutron's absence. And a final thanks to our poets. that absolutely. And a final thanks to our poets that write for these shows every 2 weeks. Without you guys, there is no show. And we certainly appreciate you. So with that, I'm going to wish everyone a good night. And final thanks to Phil. Okay. Thanks, everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.